This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The cost of living crisis has drawn a stark divide between striking French energy workers and a usually sympathetic public. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Fuel production in France has dropped by more than 60% after nearly 3 weeks of strike action by oil workers who are demanding higher wages. One in three gas stations is struggling for supplies, resulting in long lines of cars waiting to fill up. Ongoing talks between unions and workers have so far failed to reach an agreement. From Paris, the BBC's Hugh Schofield explains what the biggest sticking points are.
There has been this offer today by Total Energies, the equivalent of a month's salary in bonus to all its workers around the world, plus here in France, you know, a 6% pay rise to take account of inflation and so on. But that does not seem to have gone down well. The strike action is led by a hardline union, the CGT, and they are calling for an extension of this to other sectors of the economy to turn this into a wider struggle about inflation, about workers' rights at a time of struggle for homes and families to make ends meet and so on.
And unusually, the unions are actually losing public support.
In general, in French disputes like this, there's a sort of presumption on the part of the public that the people who are striking have a point. That's not so great here. And the polls are showing a kind of 50-50% divide between people who are generally supporting the unions and those who are very, very angry with the unions for what they're doing, especially as a lot of people are reading about the high pay which people at the refineries are getting because they're these kind of privileged workers who can go on strike because they've got the thumb on the jugular of the country.
Now, this strike action has taken a big bite out of fuel supplies in France. There have been long queues at gas stations and things like that, haven't there?
Well, that's exactly what it is. I mean, I haven't bothered trying to fill up my car because I don't want to spend 2 hours in a queue here in Paris. In some areas of the country, it's not so bad, but here in Paris, it is bad. Up in the north of the country, it's bad. Of course, they've got panic buying, which is making things worse. And it's making people very, very exasperated and aggravated. A lot of angry scenes at petrol stations, a lot of kind of alternative markets developing with people buying it up and selling it on the black. It's not good. And a lot of people criticizing the government for failing to see this one coming. The strike has actually been going on for 3 or 4 weeks, but it hasn't really started biting until the last week or so. And now suddenly the country feels very, very tense indeed.
The government, though, has been threatening to get involved and to send workers back. I mean, at what point do they actually put their money where their mouth is and do that? Are we reaching that point at this stage?
This is not a case of the government saying, we're going to break this strike, we're going to send police in, and we're going to force open these depots and these refineries with forced labour. It's not that. It's the government saying we will use a provision in law to make sure that there is some flow of petrol to essential services. It's a grey area, what amounts to essential services, what amounts to making sure that the economy runs smoothly and so on is not clear at all. But at the moment, all the government has done is order a handful of people at one refinery in the north of the country to go out and open up the valves to allow a certain flow of fuel out so that some petrol gets through to key services like ambulances and so on. It is not a whole-scale moving in with police and army to requisition depots and force striking workers to give up. That's not the situation. That would be inflammatory in the extreme. What they're doing is small-scale, but even that is regarded by the unions as a red rag, and they're very angry. They see that as a provocation.
The BBC's Hugh Schofield for us in Paris. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Checking the numbers now, European stock markets are bouncing off the lows of the session this morning. Benchmarks in Paris, Frankfurt, and Madrid are up in the 0.4% to 0.7% range. Meanwhile, global oil prices are up about 0.3% this morning. Brent crude is trading just under $93 a barrel, while West Texas Intermediate is up at $87.60. The International Energy Agency this morning warned last week's decision by OPEC Plus to slash production could push an already fragile global economy into recession. Elsewhere, the British pound is continuing to struggle against the greenback. It's trading now at $1.11. The BBC has learned finance ministers from major world economies gathered at the IMF in Washington are warning against some of the UK's deep and unfunded tax cuts. The policies have punished UK bond markets in recent weeks and forced the Bank of England to intervene with an emergency bond buying program that's controversially due to end tomorrow. The BBC's Faisal Islam has more now from the conference in D.C.
During the meeting, multiple participants at the roundtable raised concerns about countries making unfunded tax cuts that threatened financial stability at a delicate time, a clear reference to Britain. One G7 minister said privately the concern was about how the UK had doubled down even after its tax-cutting announcements had had a clear impact on financial stability. The US Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said that she was trying to understand the rationale for the mini-budget policy measures. She will meet the Chancellor later. The former Governor of the Bank of England, Mark Carney, told the BBC he was sure the government was working to ensure that it had the right budget policy.
That's the BBC's Faisal Islam reporting from Washington there. As the global economy slows, India is banking on solid domestic consumer demand to be a major engine of growth. While e-commerce companies are seeing strong demand come back this festival season, consumer spending in Asia's third largest economy is seeing an uneven recovery. The BBC's Nikhil Anamdar has that story from Mumbai.
It's sales season in India, and at the Amazon Fulfillment Center outside Mumbai, hundreds of men and women are hard at work, wrapping and packing thousands of deliveries. Long snaking conveyor belts take them up to lorries for dispatch across the country.
This is one of the busiest times of the year for warehouses like these, where products are received from sellers, they're then packed and then further dispatched onto customers. Demand has shot through the roof during this festive season as the effects of the pandemic begin to wane and more Indians go online to grab the big discounts and offers.
Amazon has hired a staggering 70,000 seasonal workers this year to service this demand and doubled its seller base to more than 1 million. Sales for e-commerce players are expected to be a third higher than last year.
The prime early access, the trends are very different. It's all high ASP.
Manish Tiwari, the e-commerce giant's country head, says a chunk of the demand is coming from India's smaller towns.
Everything's got accelerated. In some ways, what's happened in 20 and 21 has really boosted e-commerce and the entire ecosystem around it. So this Diwali or the Great Indian Festival, the month-long celebration we have, promises to be the biggest as usual, bigger than 21, bigger than 20, and obviously bigger than pre-COVID.
But the country's online shoppers, largely urban and largely affluent, make up only 3 to 4% of India's overall retail pie.
Really not seeing purchase decisions being driven.
Their spending habits may not fully reflect the nature of the country's post-pandemic recovery, says Anil Verma, whose company Godrej & Boyce makes everything from furniture to washing machines.
What India is witnessing, in my opinion, is a K-type recovery. There is traction for high-end premium products, perhaps even for luxury products, but the masses aren't buying in sufficient numbers.
This trend is visible in the auto industry as well, where premium car sales have been robust, but two-wheelers, a proxy for rural demand, have lagged. Not good news for a country where consumption makes up 60% of GDP. In Mumbai, I'm the BBC's Nikhil Anamdar for Marketplace.
And here in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.